We would like to begin this episode by thanking some people. People like Will Black, Vivian Foxglove, and Nicholas DeMarco. These are folks who have gone to patreon.com/duckfeedtv and supported this show, the whole network, and gotten cool stuff in return. You can be like them and go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv, and we appreciate it. Thanks.
I'd like to point out that all three of those names sound like assassins. Every single one of them sounds like an assassin. This is the three people they sent after Brock. Like, kind of thing. My name is Gary Butterfield.
My name is Cole Ross.
And you're listening to Watch Out for Fireballs. It is a Games Club podcast.
And this week we are continuing our horror month by talking about Dredge, which is a sim game developed by Black Salt Games and published by Team 17 for PC and contemporary consoles in 2023.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those lots of genres and masters of none.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of things. It's also an unofficial part of what I've been calling in my head Resident Evil month.
Okay.
Where we're not doing any Resident Evil games, but we're doing two games that evoke Resident Evil 1 and then a game with the Resident Evil 4 inventory grid. Like, okay. It's all Resident Evil borrowing.
Yeah.
This month.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a Gary pick. This is something that, like, not an official pick. It's just we were putting together stuff for the month. Game had an incredible amount of buzz. Mm-hmm. You know, game of the year discussions for some folk, okay. Which I think is crazy.
Yeah.
Now that I've played it, it's okay.
Yeah.
I feel a little bit of guilt because it's like, it's merely okay. It's all right. Yeah. It's all right. It's okay. I don't hate it, but I don't know. I feel a little bit like I got hornswoggled.
Hype. I'm just gonna sit back and let you keep twisting.
embarrassing little time for Gary.
I'm gonna get you. I didn't hate this. It's a strange fit because it's more of a cozy thing than it is a horror thing.
A cozy hole.
We
accidentally stepped into a cozy hole, and the best thing this did for me, other than being like a semi enjoyable way to spend 9 hours,
mm-hmm.
was solidifying some thoughts I have on cozy stuff.
Yeah.
Like, it made me think about cozy discourse and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What are the common elements to a lot of cozy games, not all cozy games, that are things that make me fail to connect with them?
Mm-hmm.
You know? This is definitely one of them. I feel like I played an entirely different game than the people who are calling this like one of the best games of the year. Played.
I mean, if you're gonna say GOTY in 2023 with the competition that it has,
dude, yeah,
I'm
yeah. In the contention,
yeah,
like even in the conversation, are you out of your mind? You know, it's all right, it's fine, it's a fun little trifle, but it's not. I don't know. We'll get into it. There's a profound lack of ambition at the heart of this that I think is like kind of problematic.
Mm.
You know, of just like not doing enough.
Yeah.
You know, we'll get into it. I have a lot of feelings on Dredge.
Yeah.
You know.
In this game, you play as a fisherman. You're hired to work at this small island village of Greater Marrow, in this archipelago where things are slightly off. Very quickly, some of the fish you pull out of the water, they're monsters.
the bad game of Monster Fish.
Yeah.
You know, the not bad game, but you know what I mean? Like, yeah, the fishing is bad. You're entirely in the boat. You never walk around. You pilot the boat between different ports and docks, and you catch fish. Use this to raise money to upgrade your equipment so you can go out and catch more fish. Mm-hmm. So you can raise money to buy your equipment to go on quest to find artifacts for a mysterious collector.
Yes.
There's a little bit of none of that. A lot of that stuff is not explicit.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little bit of like absolutely lowercase O Outer Wilds DNA in like go out into an open world and figure out the quest.
Yes.
You know, what will be the end condition. But generally you are concerned with that loop of catch fish, get better equipment.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, cozy game hallmark here. This is a lemonade stand loop. Yes. You are making money to upgrade so you can make money faster to afford more expensive things.
Yes.
Yeah. There's not really like a survival element of this, more so than just the only demand placed on you is to make enough money to repair things that are damaged when you're on the course of going, you know, puttering around. Right.
It's worth noting there's no fail state.
Yes.
The game autosaves constantly. If you like, quote unquote, die, you just go back to the last save.
Mm-hmm.
You can use that as a form of like not quite fast travel, but like, I'm going to go to a zone and see if this is worth it. And if it's not, I just die and then I reset.
Yeah.
There are no fail states, no survival elements, no, you're in no danger.
Right.
You're in a small amount of fake danger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But there's no danger.
Yeah. This is a time management game as well. You're on this very aggressive day-night cycle where your actions, including navigating and fishing, cause time to advance. If you're sitting still, then time is not moving.
Yes. Anytime you're moving.
Yeah.
So you go out, you explore, you look for fishing spots or resource pickups for various kind of these crafting elements. You haul them in, go back. You want to get back to the harbor before nightfall. There's a little bit of a risk reward thing where fishing at night is more profitable.
Mm-hmm.
It's quote unquote more dangerous and quote unquote scarier.
Yeah.
Neither of which are levers anything more than you've selected feather touch.
Yeah.
When I think about the horror in this game, I can think of is Lee Carvello going, "You selected," or, you know, "I suggest feather touch."
You selected power drive.
I'm here just hammering the power drive button. And it's like, "I suggest putter." I'm like, "No, power drive. I select feather touch."
Yeah, you know? Yeah. The game, it really sells how dangerous fishing at night is going to be. We'll talk about the ways that it becomes a little bit more dangerous. But yeah, it, like once I knew the islands and once I knew kind of the speed that my boat went at versus the light, everything, it was just kind of like, okay, well, I just need to make sure that my panic doesn't get too high.
Even sometimes if it does, you're pretty much okay.
Like, oh, it takes forever. Yeah.
Yeah, it takes forever. You can get kind of hurt and it might cut into your profits a little bit,
mm-hmm.
but it has the thing that games of this type have, you know, where all that means is time.
Yeah.
So like the only consequence, the absolute worst consequence that can happen in Dredge is you spend another day fishing.
Yeah.
You know, which is the game, you mm-hmm. know, like there's no time limit. So like the worst possible thing is I had a bad night. I got hunted down by these gentle horrors. Now I have to repair, so I should spend a day fishing and then go repair, and then I'm good as new.
Yeah,
like nothing happened. It's like it never happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know? It is less it is less punishing than Stardew Valley, where when you die, you lose half of your stuff, or you lose some of your, you know, like maybe possibly hard fought for equipment or or that you got. Yeah,
it's less punishing than that, but similar in that in Stardew Valley, all that means is you have to go out and do it again.
Yeah.
You know, the it is the most pure expression of the fail case just being do it again.
Yeah.
You know, which is common, but it's not. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's games can sometimes transcend that.
Yeah. One of the mechanical things that really let me down here is that the fishing and dredging are very, very simple.
Yes.
These are handled entirely through timing mini games. They're expressed visually in different ways. Like sometimes you have to time a little dot moving around between like two layers of a concentric circle. Sometimes you have to stop a meter at a certain point, but it is all basically tap the space bar at the correct time in order to fish faster. Even you don't really like lose a fish, really.
You can never lose a fish. What you're doing is you're kind of paying time Your performance in this mini game makes it take less time, which is a resource of which you have unlimited.
Yeah.
So these are a mild amount of fun at first, but it is a thing where you think about fishing, as a video game thing, this is the same mechanic it would be if it were fishing in Zelda.
Yeah.
Right. Like it's, the core gameplay thing of this, but they did not complicate that at all.
Mm-hmm.
There is a, like a farming feel to it that can be kind of, for a time, kind mm-hmm. of meditative, that's not demanding, but it doesn't last the length of the game, I don't think.
No.
At least for me. It's also worth noting, you can turn this off at the cost of fishing just taking longer,
mm-hmm.
which was a wild option to me. I was like, why? Like, that's why, like, this is the thing I'm doing,
mm-hmm.
You don't want to even do the thing.
Right. So like, this is like, when we talk about this as a simulation, this is like simulating being a fisherman. It is not simulating fishing.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like running the boat.
Right.
You don't actually have to do the stuff. You just kind of run the boat in a weird way.
Yeah. So here I am over here with my dick in my hand, hoping to have Breath of Fire 3 fishing. And yeah, no, sure. I don't get that. Yeah.
There are a lot of different ways this could be cooler fishing.
There are more fishing games than there are, stars in the sky.
Than fish in the sea.
Yeah.
We're coming for you.
Mm-hmm. And starfish in the sea.
Yeah. Oh, starfish in the sky of seas.
Yes.
Give this the like ridiculous fishing. Mm-hmm. Game, when you do that, just something there are different kinds of fish that you'll mm-hmm. get in different spots. Some can only be caught at night, and you can see these in advance, but one of the things that I think is frustrating about this game a little bit is that you need specific equipment mm-hmm. to catch specific fish. This has a huge knock-on effect throughout the entire game. I'm sure you have a note that relates to this later, but I think it's important, mm-hmm. when I was thinking about this game, is that like, because the lever this game has to pull in terms of game design is fish, it's all fish. My job is fish mm-hmm. is how I keep my house hot. They can say, okay, we don't want to just make it so you can catch any fish with any rod. You need like deep sea troweling equipment for this, or you need a lava resistant rod, shit like mm-hmm. that. Then you can get those fish. If you're not a collect them all player, what can the game then do to encourage you to get different fish? Because you have unlimited time, you have the safe water that you're used to, you can just do that. It takes less time to just fish a familiar zone a few mm-hmm. times than it does to go out into the exotics.
Yeah.
You'll make more money on average doing that. Mm-hmm. So they make specific fish the answer to every single quest in the game.
Yeah. So you've got to go out hunting for that exact one, which requires, when you need to hunt a different kind of fish, there is a time cost associated with getting to a dock and then making the switch on the fly.
Making room in the fridge.
Yeah.
A kind of near constant making room in the fridge to see if I have my trawling net out, which I use for passive income when I'm trying to explore, or I need to set up my deep sea rigging because this cultist fucko needs the specific fish.
Yeah.
It's all fish. It's fish all the way down.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that goes back to that very simple mini game.
Mm-hmm.
That's like a Tiger LCD mini game. It's when I talk about the lack of ambition in this game, that's what I mean. Like it all just leads to that, and it has these huge knock-on effects onto everything.
Mm-hmm.
If you are a type of gamer who is very into not having a threat and wanted to collect all the different kind of fish,
mm-hmm.
the game is designed around that.
Yeah.
If you're not that, you are forced into that hole.
Yeah.
At least a little bit, even though it presents as if you're not going to be by saying, hey, you could just do this fishing rod mm-hmm. and it will power the economy, but it just won't power the quests. Things like that.
And the game is not the economy. The economy is in service to the quests.
Yes. Yeah. The economy is something you do while you are advancing the game state.
Yeah. So there is, a tremendous amount of friction. There's a certain amount of it's kind of hard to plan for. There are two of the biomes where you're going to need to be fishing in mangroves or fishing in volcano and, you know, and lava or whatever. And you can prepare for that, but, you know, otherwise the actual like depths that you're working with, it is, you know, it is hard to know. So it's like, okay, I'm going to go out here. I'm going to see, all right, the silhouette is available here. So I've got to go back and switch things through. It is friction, but it is not interesting friction to me.
It's not friction, interesting friction, because it's not costing a resource that is limited.
Yeah.
You know, you can, say you need that stuff, but if you get out there and you need to change it, all it does is take, you know, boating back, changing out and doing it again, spending a day or two, of which you have unlimited.
Yes.
I'm not saying like a time limit would necessarily make this good. I think that I don't know what it needs other than added complexity.
Yeah.
You know, more levers to push other than just fish. Like there's a trade-off it attempts to do. So like one of the things that I feel like is indicative of this issue I have with this game at the center of it, which is a game I, you know, generally had an okay time with. This is like a C to me, is that you do a trade-off between rods that are more efficient and fast, but have narrower applications, and then Omni rods that can do lots of stuff.
Yeah.
To my mind, I always want the Omni rod because I don't want to be going back and doing stuff in the fridge, you know, all the time. However, if you feel like spending your time rearranging items in the fridge, you can be slightly more efficient on one level and less efficient on another. It kind of presents this weird, not good risk reward choice.
Yeah, but here's the thing: it ultimately, regardless of where you spend the time, you know, more time, you know, pulling up that particular fish, or more time, you know, going back and forth to docks. Like it still solves out to what feels like pretty much exactly the same.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It feels like a false expression.
Yeah.
To me in game design terms to me.
Right. You know, because it's not like you need this super fast rod to get that fish up into the boat before like the line snaps. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
it's just how much of this unlimited resource you spend.
Yeah.
You know, how many Gary Nichols do you want to spend on this? And it's like, well, I print Gary Nichols.
Mm-hmm.
They come out of my body. I wake up in a big nest of them every morning.
It's horrifying. You know? Like, yeah, what do you,
it hurts.
It clogs the toilet is the thing.
A lot of them are bloody. It's weird. You know, one of them came out once and it had an eye on it. Like, it's, you know, but I can get as many as I want.
Do you know how much zinc Gary has to eat in order to make those Gary Nichols?
Gary, eat the pennies.
Eat the pennies, Gary. Your life depends on
pennies.
It.
Come on, eat the pennies. It's like the Tiny Tigers, Tim and Eric thing. There is like a nod towards sustainable fishing in this, where when you go to a fishing spot, it will tell you how much stock is available. They can be depleted if you use it too much. If you leave them with some, they'll refill after a few days.
Yeah.
Not a major mechanic because, again, there's no such thing as scarcity in this game. Mm-hmm. You can just go to another fishing spot, just go to another port, camp out there for a while. This was never a concern for me.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea how it would ever be a concern.
Yeah. I forgive. Please forgive me if you hear background sound. There is a truck. Somebody on my cul-de-sac is having a tree mulched right now.
Oh.
So yeah. If you're hearing that, there's nothing I can do.
They're playing mulch on Switch.
Yes. Yeah. There are other ways to catch fish too. You can catch crabs by using crab pots. Or you can get a trawling net and activate that while you're going and just kind of passively catch fish in order to sell. The trade-off on these is like for the trawling net, it degrades over time while it's being used, so you have to pay to repair it. It
takes up a big spot in your inventory as well.
Yes,
like you get that instead of the deep sea.
Mm-hmm.
Thing if you're going to have it all purpose.
Yeah.
And then the crab pot you have to replace every few days.
Yes. Yeah. And you know, you also have to like empty them consciously as well. So you've got to go check them. I found the crab pots to be a little bit too fussy, so I only use those when a quest specifically called for them. They say the crab pots are very efficient economically, but I was getting by just fine trolling.
There's no. Yeah, yeah. I read that too. Like again, that feeling of everyone playing a different game than me, of I don't have to be efficient economically in this game. Like, yeah, that would be an economic way to do it. But again, I am spending unlimited Gary Nichols.
Mm-hmm.
There's no scarcity.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't take less time in real life to just go in, you know, because it takes time to do the crab pots.
Yeah.
So in that time I fucked with the crab pots, I could just do several days of me just fishing, get the same amount of money, you know? There's no such thing as efficiency in this game because there's no such need for it. You
it's,
know?
It's the Simpsons gag with like the three vats of Duff Light, yes, and Duff Dry all being filled from the same pipe.
Yes. got a real Lady Duff situation here.
Yeah.
So the trawling net ends up being good if you're doing quests at the very least. Like, mm-hmm, if you're going around exploring, because you'll just catch fish on the way.
Yeah.
So it will pay for your repairs.
Also, it has its own inventory screen. So like, yeah, the regular fish that you pull up, you've got to find space for it in your boat. Whereas, you know, those they will stay in the net and they will stay fresh.
More or less fresh.
As well.
Yeah, they eventually will rot, but it takes a long time.
Mm-hmm.
That is a thing too. So you take in your haul of fish, mm-hmm, to sell to merchants. There are fish merchants. Mm-hmm. In the entire world, there's one trinket merchant.
Yeah.
Fish are worth more if they are fresh, big, or if they're mutant, mm-hmm, fish, generally, even though there are ratios here. Again, like there's a money to, you know, the biggest sharks aren't worth it.
Yeah.
Sharks are worth a lot of money, but you can only fit at most two sharks.
Yes.
You know, outside of like a net. So like, really, you just want to catch any fish is fine, because they basically even out, mm-hmm, to their space for money ratio.
Yeah. Yeah. And trinkets, you just got to keep in your item box until you can take them back and get on Helcombe County Municipal Lake Dredge Appraisal with David Kim Parker, not those showy charlatans over at Judge Dredge. Yeah.
Judge Dredge. Judge Dredge. You get absolute, small ball money for trinkets, too. Trinkets ended up being very frustrating to me, because sometimes, you know, you'd see something and be like, oh, it's a trinket. It's not a fish. Maybe this will be something cool, like a cosmetic, like a cool flag I can, mm-hmm, fly under, something like that. And it ends up being worth less than a fish.
Yeah.
You know, I just had to make a special trip for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. And then you use that money to repair and upgrade your boat. The shipyard is where you can buy upgraded fishing gear, more specialized rods, things like that, buy faster engines and brighter lights. And new gear is unlocked at these shops by investing research points into this kind of basic tech tree.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then once you do all of the upgrades on a ship, you can upgrade your hull, which gives you more space.
Mm-hmm.
At the dry dock. Use this with money and materials that you find dredging in the world. So you get all these crafting materials, lumber, metal, refined, sailcloth, and then refined metal, mm-hmm, which is the rarest one.
Yeah.
You want a high hull size, because that determines your inventory space that you have. And then you'll make little adjustments to that within that make more of those inventory space slots multi-purpose.
Yes.
So like, everything can carry fish, but only a certain part of your Tetris, Resident Evil 4 inventory is spec'd for lights.
Mm-hmm.
These are all additive.
Yes.
So it's not like you have a light or a fishing rod. If you have room for two fishing rods, mm-hmm, all that efficiency gets added.
Yes.
It's not like a logical thing where I have like one deep sea rod. If you have two, it just means you're fishing twice as fast.
Mm-hmm.
There it's expressed as a percentage of speed.
Yeah. Same thing with your engines, right?
Yes.
You just pack that boat with engines. It was ridiculous at the end.
It's almost like Kerbal, except without mechanics. Like,
yeah,
you're not doing it actually, but it is, it is like, a nuts and bolts or a Zelda thing where you're just attaching a bunch of engines to the back of something,
mm-hmm,
to make it go fast.
Yeah. The thing that I found most like interesting about this was the inventory Tetris, like maximizing the space and figuring out how to pack as much stuff into my boat as I could in order to make an individual run. You don't have to, because again, time is unlimited, but this was the way that I kind of kept myself busy.
Yeah. Make your own fun.
Yeah.
And that way it is very similar to fishing. Like you do have to, like, here's a ball, your Skinner trapped in the garage. Like you have to make those own little, I'm going to see how many times I can bounce and see if I can beat that record.
Yeah.
Because you kind of have to do that yourself.
Mm-hmm.
The inventory Tetris is fine. Sometimes can be very challenging.
Because the fish can come in weird shapes.
They're weird fish. My favorite individual touch of this, the thing I think is most clever, is that when you take damage, it is relational to the part on your boat.
Mm-hmm.
Your inventory Tetris is the shape of your boat, and depending on where you take damage, it will hit something in your boat.
Yeah.
So your rear has your engines. If you take damage in the rear and it hits one of the inventory spaces that your engine is on, it will knock out that engine.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's kind of neat.
Yeah.
As a thing, like theoretically in a game with more threats, you could say, okay, it's not, I'm going to take this hit. It's not as big a deal if I take it on my left side because that's where my deep sea, you know, trawling equipment is. Mm-hmm. And I've gotten all the fish I need for that.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna take all the damage here. You have both individual squares that can be damaged and a overall number of hits your boat can take.
Yeah.
Both of which go up when you increase your hull.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that is a neat touch. You know, I never had all of my engines taken out to see if you can end up actually like dead in the water.
Yeah.
No idea. And in fact, like knowing this, like it is an interesting trade-off. So like you can either, you know, dedicate your space to like one big ass engine, or what I thought was a smarter thing was get as many little engines as you could. So yes. No one hit could actually reduce your ability to move that much. Yeah. Right.
It's worth noting that little thing that you can stack engines like that, the game does not tell you this.
No.
And you'd be forgiven for thinking that's counterintuitive.
Yeah.
Because it is, but that is how it works.
When the woman at the dry dock says you need to get more engines on there, I was like,
yeah,
wait, what?
Yeah, what does that mean? You yeah. know, like that's not how boats work generally.
Yeah,
is my understanding. I'm not a boatsman.
You know? Generally, I don't know. Yeah. Make a real boat go faster, you get a better engine.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or motor, like a car or a spaceship or anything in video games. You don't just mm-hmm. add more to that, you know?
Yeah.
Like the Burnout Paradise mod that just like keeps stacking engines in the front. more privilege. So that is, you know, doing that space stuff is the most interesting thing. It is a make your own fun mm-hmm. thing, but it does have some important or like some kind of interesting decisions where like if I want this piece of lumber that I need for this, you know, long-term upgrade, I have to give up this fish that I might want.
Yeah.
Even if you know, once the scales fall from your eyes and realize that fish represents like roughly 45 seconds of your time that you mm-hmm. can just get back anytime you want.
Yeah.
The idea, what it positions to you in the beginning is the idea is you want to get back to port at night so you can sleep.
Yeah.
Because fog comes out. This increases your risk of running into rocks. That can be a real problem. Mm-hmm. There's a sanity meter of this called panic.
Yeah.
If you're not getting enough sleep, panic goes up. If you're out at night, panic goes up.
Yeah.
And as panic comes out, there are kind of sanity effects that pop out.
Right.
There are phantom rocks that appear. There are monsters mm-hmm. that will come out, things like that.
Birds that'll attack. And then ultimately, like the thing that will kill you, because I went basically, I got like 6 hours in and I hadn't died and I didn't see that sanity did anything. So I was like, I'm just going to go out.
The dev literally says, if the game is too easy, sleep less. If the game is too hard, sleep more.
Yeah.
That's like the dev's advice for that.
Okay. See, yeah, I'm not sure about that. But yeah, so just I went as far one direction as I could at night, and then it takes forever, but eventually these large tentacles will reach up and then destroy your ship.
Yeah,
that's the edge of the map.
Yeah, that's the edge of the map. That's not a sanity thing. There's no max sanity thing that will kill you.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. There are things that will come up and make it harder for you. Mm. There's like an array of kind of monster things that pop out.
Yeah.
The birds are the sanity effect for the day. Mm-hmm. You know, so birds only come out if you're insane in the day. At night, you will run into the anglerfish thing.
Okay. That pretends to be a boat.
Yeah, I like that touch.
That's so again, good, yeah.
given praise while it can, it also answers your horn.
Uh-huh.
I love that. I think that's really cool. Little things that will make you like these things attractive to light, these like floating ghost mm-hmm. fog things that will target you if you have light, and then that will give you more delusions, which will mm-hmm. make you more likely to run into like phantom rocks.
Yeah,
and
okay.
Stuff. Yeah. And then there's a couple like bespoke monsters in like later game areas, but the tentacle that just comes up and kills you is an edge of the map thing.
Okay. Yeah. Wow.
So,
yeah, so it's less dangerous than I even thought.
Yeah, there's no danger. It's also, I want to throw this out there, and this was my bummer for this. It's not scary. Fishing at night is scary.
Uh-huh.
You know, like being out in the water at night is scary and should be scary.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the perspective is what does it.
Okay.
You know, being zoomed out so I can see everything from above. Like if I were on the boat, I'm not saying I want this whole game to be from first person or anything.
Yeah, yeah.
But imagine a version that is from first person. You're running your boat like you run a sub in Subnautica.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I'm walking over to the fishing pole to do fishing at night. That means I'm not looking at the, I have something behind my back.
Mm-hmm. I'm focused on the water, right?
Yeah, and there's sounds behind me. I have to look down into the water. I'm not looking up. There could be something in the sky. Mm-hmm. The omniscient perspective means that like I'm playing asteroids, kind of. You know, yeah. I'm dodging things like Pac-Man mm-hmm. when I'm above. I never got spooked, and I wanted to be spooked a little bit because again, by reputation, mm-hmm. there are people who are like, no, this game is scary as shit. Like there are stream streamers who do mm-hmm. this.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, wow, like fainting goats.
Yeah. You know? It's one of the advantages you can have if you are doing something with the briny deep, you know, mm-hmm. with the vastness of the ocean is the vastness.
Yes.
You being able to play with scale, I think, is a really important thing if you're going to have this setting. Everything feels like it is in kind of this paper craft miniature, which does, you know, I think works in tandem with the lack of mechanical rigor. Rigor is not even the right word. The lack of mechanical pressure on you to perform things under stress, really. In order to make this, you know, feel like a very toothless thing. And, you know, it almost kind of brings this, raises this question for me, which is, can a game with fishing find a market outside of either like hardcore bass fishing sim kind of things, like those games exist,
real bass,
or you know, the kind of the cozy angle, because so many people associate, oh, this is a fishing game with, okay, this is going to be an easy time, it's going to be relaxing or whatever. I want a fishing game that's going to be stressful as shit.
Yeah, I would like a fishing game to be a little bit more stressful, just as a change of pace.
Yeah,
and this is kind of how it was marketed to me.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, fishing being a cozy game hallmark.
Yeah.
You know, whereas the thing I was thinking, you know, the thing it made me think about with cozy games, and I don't think this is true of all of them,
right?
But part of the reason why they don't connect super well with me is it feels like they are like stapled together mechanics
mm-hmm.
from other games. And this game is a really good example of that. Like, I don't think this game does too much that's new. The damage to inventory thing is probably the biggest innovation
mm-hmm.
to it, but the rest of them are just, you know, Tiger LCD mini games that have existed since the dawn of time.
Yeah,
it's trying to have the metaphor and the concept do all of its work.
Yeah,
you know, but it is depressing to me when I think about those games. Like, I like Harvest Moon, I like Stardew Valley. Mm-hmm. There should be a bigger difference between those games,
probably
based on how far apart they came.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, boy. And it makes some of the discourse around cozy game stuff frustrating to me.
Yeah.
In that, like, you know, por que no los dos, you know, like have things that are like advanced, like have some new ideas mm-hmm. in your cozy games.
Yeah.
You know, you look at like Untitled Goose Game, right? Like mm-hmm. which we haven't done officially, but I think we both played that because that was another game that had tons of buzz, and it's a mild amount of fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
it's a stealth game. Right.
Yeah.
It's a stealth game with mild puzzles. Yeah.
Yeah. A mild puzzle stealth game that doesn't do too much new with stealth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the metaphor is different. Mm-hmm. You are a goose. It's cute, but you're not doing anything particularly new.
Yeah.
You know, you're still just like interacting with cartoon objects to kind of do, you know, cause distractions, like things that have been in stealth games forever.
Yes.
You know, the thing that is the new unique selling point about that is, hey, you're a goose.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like the unique selling point of this is like, oh, you're fishing for monsters.
Yeah.
But the actual thing you're doing, it could be anything.
That's the thing, you know, and this happens in all kinds of games, but it's also it is something that I really associate with, you know, the cozy games movement as much as it exists. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to feel like we're building up like a straw man to make fun of. But like a lot of the times the new idea is the theming. Right.
Yes.
Here's, you know, bear and breakfast. You're a bear who is running a bed and breakfast, and it's kind of like a Kairosoft thing where there are, you know, people you can tell, you know, like characters you can talk to and get like funny, you know, funny dialogue out of it.
Yeah.
The new idea there is, We have a pun on the we have a pun on the title, and it's a bed and breakfast, or and it's a bear running a bed and breakfast, right? So that's why I joke about alpaca boulangerie, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
there's nothing wrong with that specifically.
It's not enough for me personally. I can just if this reduces to wireframe, which any game is going to do after enough time, if you're engaging with it, like, is that wireframe going to suffice? Right.
I will also. For me, also, the simpler the game is, the quicker it will reduce to wireframe.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, and these games all tend towards simplicity, in an extreme way.
Because, like, they need to be low stakes, right?
They have to be very low stakes, because otherwise it's not comforting.
And I would say, like, simplicity and low stakes don't necessarily have to go hand in hand, actually.
Well, Super Hexagon, you know, like they certainly don't. And also, you know, I'm not super interested in not. In work that is intentionally unchallenging.
Yeah.
And when I say challenging, I don't mean like in a hardcore gamer way. I mean, in terms of like ideas or being made uncomfortable or having a friction applied to me or having an uncomfortable concept applied to me. I think that it is a good thing in art to have a sense of being like challenged a little bit, you know? And part of the whole discourse around it that makes this come up is that it's never positioned as like, hey, this is some cute games. It's always positioned as like a movement.
Yeah.
You know, like as like a revolution, you know, and that's the part that, you know, it's like, well, yeah, but do some real cool game design shit as well.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
don't just slap a bear on lemonade stand and call it a day. Mm-hmm. Or in this case, you know, slap a couple meters on fishing mini games and call it a day. Mm-hmm. I don't think the devs like intentionally did that. You know, there is care and craft that went into this, but it does. The thing I came away from this is just feeling profoundly unambitious.
Yeah.
And that doesn't feel good to me. It's harder for me to respect as an artistic work because I want to see reach, you know, I want the person making this to be going for something.
Yeah.
You know, and I just don't get that sense from not all, but a lot of games that this reminds me of.
Yeah. You know? There's a broader discussion about, like, you know, the games that we're remarking on. These have a particular audience. They tend to reach particular people. They've got fan bases, you know, oftentimes from marginalized backgrounds, you know, that kind of thing. Like, you know, it is more I don't want to like wade into that or feel like I am saying like these people don't understand that they're being tricked into liking baby games. That's not what I'm trying to say at all.
I don't care what people play. Right. I just mean in terms of my position, not as a person who like legitimately does not care what video games people like, but my position as a critic or somebody who is interested in the craftsmanship of games, I would love to see a little bit more ambition.
Yeah.
You know, like that's literally it from, you know, the part of me that likes seeing that likes seeing a game that is trying something.
Yeah.
You know, and doing something. I like that. I love to see it. You know, and having not seeing it tends to bum me out, you know, and we exist in a world where like buzz and movements exist and everyone has a bizarre need to present their taste as virtuous. So when you end up with this kind of moment we're in right now with the Tender Froghouse moment, there is a lot of like, you know, this is what games should be: wholesome, you know, and non-threatening. Like this is the way things could be, and that worries me because I don't want that for the art form.
Yeah,
you know, there have always been games like that. A lot of them I really really like. It doesn't bother me that people like it. I just find them hard to talk about.
Yeah,
like it hard to apply criticism to, hard to learn things from them. You know, I like Donut County. I learned jack dick from it. Like it's not a thing. It's barely a toy.
Yeah.
It's a fun little toy and there's nothing wrong with that, but it feels like it doesn't belong in the same discussion.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know.
Yeah. And this goes into discussions that we've been having, you know, all the time, you know, for a long time. Theming isn't nothing, but it can't be enough. Theming isn't nothing, but it's also not enough.
Yeah,
it is not entirely determinative, you know?
Yes.
And so we have a theming here where it is making these nods toward, you know, we're at sea. There's a Lovecraftian kind of thing going on. This is a Lovecraftian story, right? Mm. not enough to make this to make this scary.
What you're actually doing, you know, the thing I've been hammering for the entire time of the show is like, it in a video game, it matters what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know, it can't just be what you know, the context does matter, but it also matters what I'm doing in the moment. This reminds me, and I don't want, you know, not inviting yells, but the rhythms of this remind me a little bit of console RPGs, like going out and getting money. Like, it feels a little bit like grinding.
Yeah.
You know, in a way. So what I'm actually doing is just like, at absolute best, a little bit meditative for a time, but never particularly compelling.
Yeah.
You know, and wanting to be compelled by art, like, you know, incident cucks. You know, like I like being compelled by stuff. I want to be drawn along by things happening.
Yeah. You know? I'm also let down by like the quests in this, you know.
Oh yeah.
You know, not just the fact that you're mostly going out and looking for a particular fish. You know, you just get a shopping list, you know, which is, you know, entirely presented in silhouette, which is solved for me by taking a photo of the screen with my cell phone, so I can remember what they're asking for, you know. But also like the little stories here. So like when you're going to ports and when you're talking to people, you're playing like an Inkle game, right?
Yes.
You've got, you know, just a little bit of dialogue. You can maybe learn something about the way people live here or what they want. But not really like hitting enough super cool ideas. Like the best the horror gets in this is people asking it to deliver mysterious packages. You yes. know that are yeah, probably the a little is too
the,
leaky.
The best the horror gets.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's same. Like, I was disappointed in the prose. Some of the descriptions of fish are okay.
Yeah.
Just throwing that out there. Like, it's not, you know, give it a hand where it does. Mm-hmm. The last little thing generally about this I want to say is I'm really glad we're doing this, and then we're doing Sayonara Wild Heart soon.
Okay.
I just finished that game. That is also, I would probably categorize that as close to a cozy game in terms of fail states and stuff. And that feels like that has a much stronger artistic statement.
Mm-hmm.
To it, and does a lot more.
Yeah,
like that is a very, very short game. It's basically like a one or two sitting game that does reveal a lot of cool new ideas. Like there are cool levels and stuff. I like that game a lot. So it is, there is a night and day that can happen even within this kind of subgenre. Personally for me. The things you usually get for these rewards when you go get this are research nodes, little points, sometimes books. Books are a thing that you slot in one at a time and they fill up. You read them while you're fishing and then give you a permanent perk.
Yeah.
If you can, you always want to have a book going. There are a limited amount of books in the world. There are also some quests, you know, and they're dredge quests. So it means just go get these fish that will give you very powerful books. Those were timed at launch, but nobody liked it. You know, so they patched that out. You can get 4 very good books if you go out and catch, you know, collect a list. Go to the shopping list of fish.
Something that is, you know, that when we talk about the things that this does right, I like how the 4 major island groups you go to each kind of have their own little gimmick to them.
Yeah.
And the way that it presents, like, that is also where cool ideas are you know, presented here, but also at, you know, just CR discussion about the general kind of low stakes of things.
Yeah. It's cool when you get to a new place and you learn kind of the backstory and what its deal is.
Yeah.
That's fun. And figuring out the gimmick is fun. Mm-hmm. You know, that is the most you feel a sense of pressure is when you don't know what a new island will do.
Yeah.
The game looks good.
Mm-hmm.
It has a unique art style. This like low poly, very flat shaded, but the characters have a cool look to them.
Mm-hmm.
Almost like paper dolls that are like folded over a bunch.
Mm-hmm.
To me, they look like almost like Dishonored 1 characters.
Oh yeah. That's a good way to style. Put it. Yeah,
like with the exaggerations and such. Mm-hmm. But very colorful. It's a very pretty game. There's no it's not dreary or dark or like, you know, blue and gray. Pretty game.
Yep. Good swing. Nice art.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Like the soundtrack too. It's spare, you know, maritime sounding. It's using the right kind of instrument palette and does what it needs to do.
Yeah. Yep. So this is Black Salt's first major game release. They're a small team, 4 developers who have been doing work for hire for a long time before getting together. They had prototyped a bunch of games, you know, and given them to testers and chose what would become Dredge based on the feedback
of
that play loop.
Yeah. And when they set out, they were inspired by games like Papers, Please and Frostpunk. They wanted to make something with an oppressive atmosphere. I don't necessarily think they succeeded. See the previous conversation about the art style, like something this colorful just does not necessarily kind of evoke that. There is
colorful
an atmosphere,
or stakes, you yes, know, like yeah. Papers, Please and Frostpunk are two of the most mechanically oppressive.
Yes.
Games in existence.
Mm-hmm.
Those are using all of their mechanics to make you feel a thing, doing the art of game design.
Yeah.
To make you feel something, you know, with no illusion.
Yeah.
You know, with less rounding on your part.
Yeah.
I can imagine them. It's like almost like the same way that you and I accidentally stepped in a cozy game.
Mm-hmm.
I could almost imagine a thing where the developers accidentally stepped into a cozy game.
Oh yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't know the story behind it, but like I could almost see it if they were setting out for a Papers, Please and Frostpunk and landed mm-hmm. this.
Yeah. They started with Papers, Please, but they ended up with Papercraft.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ended up with just regular Please. The game of manners.
Oh, a lot of the developer interviews talk about how they had prototyped more complicated fishing, more complicated navigation, you know, dealing with things like, you know, line tension and, you know, things like that, dealing with like more like weather systems and, you know, dealing with chop and all of that.
Yeah.
They kind of lumped that in as scope creep and really worked to keep the game as focused and simple as they could to kind of stick to this loop that they had prototyped.
Yeah. And this it was remarkably popular. That worked out for them. You know, again, people talk about this game of the year. Just in terms of my preferences, this is an interesting case where I wanted more scope creep.
Yeah.
You know, if that's considered scope creep, that is would have probably been a balm a little bit to what we're talking about.
Yeah. Here. And when we're talking about scope, like this is a 4-person studio. So like,
yeah, that's true too. I also just throwing this out there whenever I'm met on an indie game, you know, incredible feat, 4 mm-hmm. people, tons of talent and care went into this. I don't mean to imply that they're lazing it in.
No.
I just wanted to like this a lot more than I did.
Mm-hmm.
And when I search for the reasons why, it feels like there's just not enough that got done.
Yeah.
You know, that's not a failing on their part. It's 4 mm-hmm. people.
Yeah.
You know, it's I have to death of the author it, though.
Yeah.
You know, it has to, it exists in the playing. It doesn't exist in its creation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, there is craft here. There's an amount of craft, but, you know, it's not pulling in the direction that we necessarily would have wanted. They've made a huge splash. I don't think you could ask for anything more really from an indie developer could not have asked for a better reception to their first effort.
No. Yeah.
So,
and I wish them well.
Yes.
You know, like the I want to see their game influenced by Papers, Please and Frostpunk.
Yes.
You know, their favorite part of the game was designing and describing the fucked up fish.
Mm-hmm.
That comes through again. Those descriptions and fucked up fish are good.
Yeah.
You know, all seeing cod is a powerful phrase. you know, I can't argue with that. That's good.
Nope.
You know, so yeah, this is a huge breakthrough hit, catching on indie horror spaces. You know, streamers played it and then broke through to the Cozy Crew.
Mm-hmm.
For this. They didn't expect that. However, because it was such a big hit, there was demand for new content or DLC. The mm-hmm. DLC came out yesterday, I think.
An
email about it.
just today, or maybe yesterday, they announced the release date for the DLC.
An email that said new content is available, like a Nintendo email that's like new content is available for the game you have. I can buy it right now.
Maybe there was look here on Destructoid literally today, horror fishing game Dredge gets its first expansion in November.
I just have an email from Nintendo that says, hope you're enjoying Dredge, keep the gun fun going with DLC, download the Blackstone key for $4.99 now.
Yeah, okay, so maybe that is that is something here. This content is called the Pale Reach, so
okay.
I think they're
multiple
they've got
DLCs.
Two different
Yeah. So they're doing more. They're expanding more stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and maybe some of that stuff will answer what you know, some of these issues we have, right? Like
mm-hmm.
that just came out yesterday. I'd already played this game and beat it.
Yeah.
You know, so we might get scholared mm-hmm. in this. Like, it's possible the Blackstone key, as opposed to being a new island or, you know, more fucked up fish, might end mm-hmm. up being some of these additional pressures that we're looking for.
Yeah.
You know, so if it sounds like we're talking about a game you didn't play, that could be why.
Yes.
You know, we're recording this in early October 2023.
games are living documents, especially in the first year after their release.
And it's a huge upside. It's a feature, yep. Not a bug.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's get into it. Oh, spoilers. There is a big twist at the end of this. There's a M. Night Shyamalan. We get Shyamalan'd, in this. We're going to spoil that twist in the episode. So if you're interested in the narrative of this game, play it before you listen.
Yes, it is very short.
Yes.
Let's do. We have our prologue. We have our fisherman cruising his boat out to sea when this fog overtakes him and he crashes into the rocks right beneath a lighthouse. Not the way it's supposed to go.
Yes, that's the opposite of lighthouses.
Yeah.
The mayor comes and greets us. The mayor of Greater Marrow wakes you up, asking if you even saw the lighthouse. He is obviously, he looks like a haunted leprechaun. He's obviously up to no good.
Right.
He recognizes you, and this is when I sent you a text very specifically. I was like, I think you're gonna like this because I didn't know you played it, because the beginning of it's pretty compelling. Like, he's like, oh, you must be our new fisherman, you know, him not having a name. I was like, oh, this is gonna get into some weird alienation kind of shit, like, oh, I am just the fisherman, I don't have amnesia, but I've been put into this. Like, I was expecting big things from that. He says the townspeople have loaded up your things into one of the island's old boats.
Yeah.
Get your bearings in the daytime. Be sure to return by night. I'm going to Tom Nook you. You may have this boat, and we're going to take a portion of your fish until you pay it off. This is our tutorial, basically.
Yeah. I thought there was going to be like more to this. I thought it was going to be a pervasive thing. You pay it off before you even venture outside of the little buoy area here.
It wants you to do that. It says stay in this zone until you finish it off, because it's a tutorial. So I think it's actually a pretty clever way to do
it is
a tutorial.
Yes. Yeah. So you go out and fish, pulling in blue mackerel and cod, nothing unusual happens here. You go back and the mayor says, like, hey, we'll get you this loan. You go in and you sell at the fishmonger. He's real surprised that they found a new fisherman so fast.
Again, pretty cool, right? What's happening to these fishermen?
What happened in Alaska?
that could be a cool thread to pull harder on. We go to the shipwright. She's repairing a boat that has hull damage above the waterline, which is unusual. The morning of day three, an old woman approaches. She's the lighthouse keeper, and she says, you should leave. There's nothing here for someone like you anymore.
Looking back at these early incidents, knowing the twist, they make very little sense.
It's pretty weird.
Yeah,
that happens. Everyone's playing along. It's a surprise party, and they don't want to ruin it for you. It's kind of how it feels. they're keeping the secret because it'll just be more fun that way for you.
So the mayor gives us a little task here, saying, "Hey, can you take this small package? You put it into your cargo, take it over to Little Marrow across the bay. There's like an island facing this one. He doesn't want it to spoil." It's something organic and it's kind of moist.
It's like pulsating. You get a roiling pudding. You go there and you give it to this dock worker on the thing. He doesn't show you what's in it. He pays you and gives you a book on sustainable fishing. Once you finish that book, it gives you a chance of not depleting a fish thing, and kind of teach it, this is your beginning to books. You finish that special order there, you get another one. You go back to the fishmonger. He's like, I have a customer who wants this kind of thing. They do the first one, you go out and get the things. Second one, they want squid only comes out at night. So you have to go out at night for the first time. The first time you're going to maybe see spooky cartoon eyeballs if your sanity goes low enough,
maybe possible.
You go and catch them, and this is what unlocks the crab pot.
Yeah.
Because his customers are looking for specific crabs. Who isn't?
Relatable. And then you pay off your boat loan. It's super fast. The mayor says, hey, this extra money has let us reopen the dry dock. And this is where we get our ability to make upgrades, first upgrading, expanding the room available for particular equipment, and then, unlocking the ability to upgrade your hull.
Yeah. He continually mentions making the town bigger. And I, again, in setting expectations, mm-hmm. I thought that was going to be part of the loop. Like, am I doing a city builder
with
this? You know, not, I didn't want a full city builder, but like, what if I were choosing between, you know, like SimCity for the SNES? Like, what if I were choosing between two different upgrades for the town that would give me different benefits?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, something.
And again, just like this game nominally should be hitting all of my, you know, hooray buttons.
Yes.
You know, like, oh, we've got horror. We've got we've got like a management kind of thing being teased and does not necessarily deliver it's on those.
Still in the honeymoon period for me where I'm like expecting those things to drop any moment. Krusty, we're going to get to, you know, Krusty's going to get here.
Yes.
The next day, you know, you go out catching and this is scripted. You will catch a grotesque mackerel. It's all lumpy and disgusting. The fishmonger cuts it open and finds a handkerchief inside.
Yeah.
Which, you know, and that's good, mysterious. He pays a lot of money for it.
Yeah.
And then the first bit of foreshadowing thing happens here. A strange man appears at your porthole, looking in on your reflective surface on the boat right there, and says, hey, I need that handkerchief.
Yeah.
You know, meet me at my sinister manse on Blackstone Isle, south of the bay.
Yeah.
This is the first time where you're going to start making excursions further away.
Mm-hmm.
There is a mild amount of interest in this because you know, you want to get up a little bit before sunrise to do these. So you get them before sunset. And the islands, one thing I do like about this game, the islands are far enough apart that these treks do feel like something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you don't, if while you're still scared of night, once you realize that you don't actually have to be scared of night, it can feel like a planning element.
Yeah. You're watching the time melt as you're steaming along. Right?
Yes. You're trying to see if you make it in time.
Yeah.
Eventually that will all fade away.
Yeah.
As you get more upgrades and you realize the illusory nature of the danger. But initially that works.
And it's not just major locations that you're going toward. Like on your way toward those major locations, there are smaller islands that you're going to want to circumnavigate and check the shoreline for interactables, you know, quest givers and stuff.
Yeah, like we haven't started doing wrecks yet, but that's where wrecks show up a lot.
Right.
We go there and this sinister man framed in the doorway introduces himself as the collector. He loves strange artifacts. Who doesn't?
Mm-hmm.
And the handkerchief that you found comes from a shipwreck that he's been looking for a long time.
Right.
He's going to give you some dredging equipment so you can pull up old wrecks and help him find what he's looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And this is actually the structure of the game.
Yes.
This is the main quest.
Mm-hmm. There are four items. We have a ring, a necklace, a watch, and a music box with its key. Is what we need to get, and each of these is going to be found in one of the major island groups that you're going to go to, kind of at the corners of the map. Something that is a bit of a bummer, this is linear. Like, he is going to direct you towards which ones you're going to go to in order, right?
And he also marks them on your map. So there's not like detective work that's involved in this. Like, you're not doing a series of smaller tasks to get this. I imagine speed runs of this game are pretty quick.
Yeah.
You know, because you can beeline for a lot of this stuff. You sometimes need certain upgrades and equipment to get them, but there's not a whole lot to get them usually. You know, there's a couple of little mini things, but knowing where to go is not part of the quest.
Yeah.
We get a little side quest here, another tutorial style side quest. This one called The Builder. She hates living in Greater Marrow and wants to go live out Steel Point by herself. She needs lumber and scrap.
Yeah.
So this is teaching you about dredging.
Mm-hmm.
Dredging has, I think, the most compelling of the mini games.
Yes.
Even if it's not great. You're moving a little dot between two little tracks and avoiding breaks in the line.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a Tiger LED game. It's nothing more than that, but it's probably the one that's the hardest. You know it, but you do that to get lumber and stuff, and this is a risk reward. Like, it's needed for a quest, but you could also use that to upgrade your ship. Eventually you'll realize these are not rare materials.
No you're gonna get way more than you actually need. Although sometimes there's a particular one and you're just not going to find any of it where you're going. My kingdom for a bolt of cloth.
I ended up kind of coal style Subnautica-ing this. And early on, because I didn't know the shape of it, I did all of the dredging. So I always had a big backlog of this stuff. Mm. Like, my item box was full of this.
Okay.
Partly also, I just liked the dredging minigame more.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
you know, was this thing. So the only thing I was ever hard up for was the reinforced steel.
Yeah.
Which I just ended up buying from the little nerd who talks too much.
Oh yeah.
You know, so other than that, but like, yeah, it is a thing where if you're just playing in the flow of the game, you can have some scarcity here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now that we're introducing these side quests, we should probably, I didn't make notes of all these. I didn't do all of them. Like people were talking about a photographer. I found some photography equipment, but didn't, like find the photographer.
It's fine. Yeah. It's, you know what it is? It's a way to complete your Pokedex. You can catch all the fish and that, collects them all for your log, but then you can take pictures of mammals. Yeah. And that takes pictures of them for your log. It's gotcha. All that, like, got to catch them all mentality. It's just gotcha. A different, mildly different interface for it.
Mm-hmm.
So okay. Same thing. I didn't do all of the side quests either. Mm-hmm. I did some of them. I ended up getting the camera. And then once I found what it was, I dropped my Switch in disgust and went and had a sandwich. I was like, I don't want to just fill out my Pokedex anymore.
No, thank you. Yeah. So I brought the crabs to the fishmonger. And he says, like, hey, what do you think happens to those people who eat the aberrant fish? And he asks us to bring him one, any of them. It says, like, I can hear this thing whispering to me. And then he kicks us out and locks the door. He eats this and gets very sick.
He gets very sick for a couple of days.
Yeah.
Again, when I felt like this was hinting at something a little bit more interesting, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I fucked up. Yeah. I should have refused this quest. I have gotten rid of a major resource for myself.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to have to sell my fish somewhere else or go do something to heal the fishmonger who I fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the time tax, though, again, which are unlimited Gary Nichols.
Yes.
You just sleep for 2 days and he comes back. Mm-hmm. Like nothing happens. So he kicks out, locks the door. He says he'll be back and not talk about it ever again. We'll never speak of this again.
Yes.
The lighthouse keeper talks about a spot behind Greater Marrow where the current carries debris. Yeah. And there's a strange glow that comes from there at night. We go there. This is where we can get the ornate key.
Yeah.
One of the things we need for the collector.
It's gigantic. It's the size of a shark.
It is a shark shaped key. It's the key to the city.
Yeah.
God, I got to get a key to the city at some point.
Man,
can you imagine? I would hide it. I don't think I'd give it back.
No.
I'd say I lost it. What would they do if you lost it?
But I mean, off with your head.
I don't think they have the power to do that, man. Maybe, but then you can seek asylum.
Okay.
Other cities. And then you collect keys and you get a gigantic key ring. You drag around the country.
I would ransom the Ooh. Key to the rival town, like across yes. the lake or whatever. Like, yes. Look yeah. who's holding all the cards now.
Yeah. How would you like access to everything in this in yeah. Portland, Vancouver?
Yeah. Well, I would also use the key to get into the mall at night because that yeah. seems fun.
Toy stores, candy stores.
Yeah. yeah. Food, fun, and fashion. The mall has it all.
Is it all for an evening or a week? So he's mad that we didn't have the lock that goes with it.
Yeah.
But he gives us power-ups. He reads from his book and gives us a spell mm-hmm. called Haste. The way Haste works is it is a stamina meter.
Mm-hmm.
It's sprinting in a boat.
Yeah.
It will burn out your engines if you max it out. And if you use it at night, it increases your terror.
If you use it during the day, it'll increase your terror too.
My terror never got high enough to form an eye during the day.
Yeah.
It did during certain places when there was like a monster right there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But it didn't during normal play.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it can make you more spooked and it can burn out.
Right. Yeah. He is reading to you from this crimson and silver tome that he has. And he says, like, hey, my intuition tells me that the current may have carried some debris to the southeast to the Gale Cliffs. So this is our first kind of major voyage to something very far away.
Yeah.
And in my head, I'm thinking, all right, so man, like that's a pretty big distance. What am I going to find out there? Like, am I going to have to return? Where is my safe harbor? Where do I sleep, etc.? Instead, each of these little areas has you've got this traveling merchant. It has like a barge where you can dock and then do everything that you could otherwise do at Greater Marrow.
Yeah. Who talks more than the other people?
Yes.
You have to click through more dialogue for everything they do.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as I can tell, they don't really have a character.
Yeah.
Like, it's really weird. They say the most words, but they are the least like spooky or interesting.
She's just helpful and concerned.
Yeah. She's a little tiny helper bot. We go to her. She's gonna be our contact. She'll do all the things. There's a resident of this old whaling town here called Ingfell, who mm-hmm. asked for some rotting conger eel, basically teaching you about the rotting mechanics.
Right.
I would rather die than do this. Just like keep, you know, keep a fish until it rots, like watch a clock and then fill it out and get some money. But the important thing is she tells us a story about an old guy who lost his mind because he found a scroll and it told him that eating mutated fish would make him immortal. This character shows up later.
Yes. Yeah. Our main character here, there are kind of two main characters. There's this hermit that is living on the outskirts of town that was destroyed by the main threat here. This huge serpent that lives within the cliffs and is kind of burrowing these holes. This hermit, though, this, you know, last holdout of this destroyed town, he's thinking of moving, but he can't go to Ingfell where everybody fled to because his brother lives there. And there's a bit of fussing and feuding going on.
They don't like it because they got into a fight over inheritance. The hermit took the family crest, which is also the size of a shark, with him and left town. He's like, can you go grab that for me so I can make amends with my brother?
Yeah.
However, the serpent dragged all the houses down into the cliffs. So it's going to be in a dangerous zone.
Yes.
You know, we have to take the long way around. There's a giant serpent that will pop out of the water. One of the things that happens is when it hits you, it will keep going. You will have time to do stuff after you take a hit.
Yes.
So you can't, in my experience, I could not really avoid the serpent. I didn't have good engines at this point, and you still have the turning radius of a boat.
Yeah.
You know, you're not super maneuverable. The intended effect, I think, is just to take the hit and then get the thing anyway and get out of there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and this is the scariest, this, you know, this is a big monster. Like, narratively, this is a big monster, but in actual play, nothing happens.
Yeah.
It's the equivalent of 45 seconds of time to sell enough fish to get that repair.
Right.
You know, you get that crest. When you get it back to him, you take it to his brother, and he says, hey, will you detonate some charges they placed on some roads blocking the passage of the cliff? You do this, then we can take the hermit home. We take him in our inventory like Zelda 2.
It's very funny. Just like,
oh, hey, that's great.
Pick me up with your mouse and put me in with the fish.
Yeah. Would you put me next to some crab? This reopens, they reopen the whaling yards, even though there are no whales, to sell all their used explosives.
Yes.
This is a exceedingly minor mechanic. In this game, you can get explosives and there are very specific walls you can blow up.
Yes.
They're not bombs in another video game where they might have multiple uses. You can't drop them if something's chasing you. You can't do anything like that. They're just keys to like four specific doors across the entire map.
Yeah. There'll be treasure behind most of them. You know, there'll be a dredging spot, a place to get a special fish. Like, there's an overarching quest to get these legendary fish, and sometimes they're hidden behind there. The other thing that is slightly mechanically interesting, if you're trying to maximize the economy in this, those will be shortcuts between areas with lots of fishing and getting back to the traveling merchants. The fact that they are sold here, once you unlock this, the traveling merchant sells them for just a little bit more expense.
But they also take up room. So you get them and you put them in your item box, and depending on Resident Evil vibes again, where like, oh, I didn't bring the bomb, so I had to go back to an item box and go grab the bomb.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we have the bombs. Now we can clear the way to where the music box sank. We give this to the collector. He gives us a spell called Manifest that lets us fast travel back to him, which is useful. Yeah. I don't think it would have been, you know, letting us fast travel to multiple points wouldn't have been awful, you know?
Yeah.
Specifically, the only thing that really bugs me is the trinket guy. Mm-hmm. Like, I would get trinkets and then just be like, fuck, I gotta clear up my inventory and go get $60 from that asshole. You know, I don't even want it. Like, I could just throw it in the ocean, but that feels bad too. You know, I don't know. I wanted to have a way. I wanted a trinket seller in every port.
Think of it like you're making a reef. You know, that's how I think of it every time I throw my old bikes and lawnmower parts into the local pond.
Stopwatches. The whale falls. He says, once we do this, he says, hey, the Stellar Basin seems to have caught some debris. That should be a place, and that gets marked on your map.
Yes. This is kind of this shallow atoll down in the southwest where, you know, you get inside of it, and the main threat here is you can't cross through the center of this. It's, you know, kind of like a circular bowl kind of thing, because there's something huge living in the center. It's more active at night, but regardless, the tentacles will reach up and attack you.
Yes.
And there's all kinds of deep fishing around the center there that you can't really do when this thing is active. Right.
Yes. This place has a cool story. This used to be a tourist destination. before all this stuff happened. On the right side of it, there's the research kind of section on the left, and on the right, there's the tourist section. Yeah, the tourist section, you can find a dog. Mm-hmm. Did you end up finding the dog?
I did find the dog, and I took it to the research assistant that you find.
I found it disappointing. There's a bunch of lonely people in this game. Uh-huh. Only the research assistant wants the dog.
Huh.
And I was like, why can't I give this to the lady who was up at Steel Point? Or like, I was like, oh, maybe this will, there's a guy in the, who gives you a quest in Little Marrow who talks about missing his son. Mm-hmm. Like he wants you to pick up his son's ring or something like that.
I sold that ring.
Hell yeah, dude.
I didn't even know it was like tied to a quest. And yeah. So when I saw that I had dialogue from that guy, he's like, hey, if you find my son's ring, and you say like, oh, I sold it. And he rushes off hoping to talk to the guy before it. Yeah.
I was like, why can't I get, I want to give that guy the dog.
Yeah.
You know, once you get the dog, there's no hint as to who you can give the dog to.
Yeah.
I just was going up to every NPC I had met in the game who might want a dog and seeing if there was an option for give dog.
Yeah.
And until then, the dog lived it. You can put creatures and people in your actual item box as well. They don't have to live in the ship. So like I had a vision. I didn't try this, but how funny it would be to collect all the people you can collect in this game and just put them all in your item box.
Yeah. I named the dog Bilge because that's where he lives.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. The big one's taking care of the little one.
I mean, this is totally Monday morning quarterbacking, but like, imagine if having the dog in your inventory, like your active inventory, gave you a passive benefit, like reduced the rate of panic buildup.
Sure,
because you had a companion, you know.
Give it the same effect that the later thing does that scares away monsters.
Yeah,
it barks, something like that. Or you get different passes depending on who you give the dog to.
Yeah,
you have multiple people who want the dog. You give the dog to different people. The researcher gives you like a research bonus. You know, not something as bland as a couple research tokens, which is what I think she gives you, but like lowers the research thresholds for things, or says, "Hey, I can make these unique upgrades to your ship."
Right.
You know, just absolutely Monday morning quarterbacking. You can spitball like a thousand cooler things to do with this dog.
I'm not a smart man, and I feel like I'd had a pretty cool idea.
It's harder not to think of them.
Yeah.
You know, so you get here, we check out this ruined lab here. You know, they're talking about the equipment is unsafe. You know, if you use it, you expect retaliation. It's been fucked up by something large.
Yeah.
We go, there's a fortress to the north. This is where the researcher lives. She had to flee because the huge creature attacked. And because it's dredge, the quest just means she needs specific fish to continue this.
Yeah. Her fishing equipment. Fish. Yes. Her fishing equipment has been damaged. And luckily you came along.
Yes.
Cool, spooky detail that doesn't really go anywhere. She talks about like ever since that monster destroyed the lab, she started getting these letters from her deceased sister, but she is finding them in places where, places where like, oh, I would have looked there. Like, you know, like I like, this is not something that she sent to me or like it got lost in the shuffle or whatever. They're popping up places. Cool idea.
Cool idea. There's no way to resolve that.
Yeah.
We can go there. We get the dog. This is the first place you'll find a mimic. You see a wreck and it turns out it's a big hermit crab. That's cool.
I love that.
I like that. Yeah. The first time that happened, big smile. Credit where it's due for sure.
There's the ones that look like the black stones, like the obelisks you can go and check out. I never figured out what to do with those. It'll say like, hey, do you want to touch these black stones? And then it says nothing happens. I don't know if that's where you need to have like a certain amount of panic to have like the insights. Yes. Is that okay?
Yeah. I also didn't do it because I never got my panic high enough. Mm-hmm. And I was gunning for panic. Yeah. Like I was sleeping like 2 hours a night in this game. But the never ended up at one of these stones when I had enough panic for it.
Yeah.
Give her the dog. We eventually get all of her fish. Once she has the fish, she says she needs samples from deeper in the ocean. That's where the big monster is.
Yeah.
She can use prototype parts from her old research station to make a device that will allow you to fish the abyssal depths.
which literally just looks like a fishing line with a light bulb at the end of it.
Yeah, I love that. It's pretty funny.
This unlocks the ability to buy better, deeper deep sea fishing stuff.
Yes. Like Ocean this one was the previous deep depth, and now yes. Abyssal is the ultimate deep depth.
Yeah. To get every, you know, to solve the main quest, you do need to upgrade this to go beyond Abyssal down to the Hadal.
Yes. Once we do this, as you know, you have to get something from the middle. Here's a device that'll pacify that creature. Mm-hmm. So you take that those fish and go to the researcher, and she gives you a choice between good news and bad news. The bad news is that these fish are highly mutated. The cause is this giant creature at the center of the basin. It's harmful to life at a cellular level. This creature is making all the other fish around it mutated.
Yes. I chose the bad news thinking I would get the good news. I didn't see what the good news was.
I don't know what the good news is either. It might just be one of those. There is no good news.
The fish are valuable.
Yeah. They'll save you so many units of 45 seconds of your life. The device, we can now go in the middle of the ring and get the thing the collector wants.
Yes. Here. Yeah. And he gives us the banish spell, which will ward off and dispel threats. This I found was only useful in the volcano area.
Yeah. 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 And even there, the cooldown is not sufficient really for it. Mm-hmm. Like you use it, but it's a weird thing. It's good to have, I guess. The next target is somewhere in the channels called the Twisted Strand to the northwest. Yeah. This is this mangrove. Mm-hmm. Zone, this jungle swamp here, fungus. We need special equipment to fish here, here, or one of the Omni rods.
Yeah.
And the quest here is we find this airman who crashed here.
Yes.
He won't leave because he lost all of his people to these things he called mind suckers.
Yeah.
This is one of the few places there are just straight up lots of monsters during the day.
Yeah.
These tentacles, they'll come up, they raise your panic. Mm-hmm. And then they will raise walls of plants to cut off egress.
That's cool. Again, that this is a shifting maze is a good. It's a good little mechanical trick.
Yeah, it's a cool idea. It's a little bit to me let down in that again. Like my panic being high is a very low consequence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the game doesn't have any cards to play against me.
Yeah.
You know, it can say a thing. This will make it easier for you to play cards against me, but all of the cards are draw one.
Yeah.
You know, it just doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
But yeah, he wants to get revenge.
Yeah. You offer to help, and he says, "Hey, you know, there are these pieces of my squadron's mortar that are around here. You know, go to these dredge spots and bring them up." And then you bring it back, and he says, "Hey, you probably thought it was pretty cool that I sent you to get things that weren't fish. Well, now go get me some fish so I can make special bait for these traps to lure the mind suckers into them so we can fire on this bad boy."
This was the turning point for me of getting frustrated that everything was just fish.
Yes.
That the game presents a collect-em-all kind of option and then has everything exist within that framework.
Yeah.
You know, imagine if everything you were doing in Pokemon was just getting us four specific Pokemon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's how you solved every problem in the game.
Yeah.
So you go do that. Eventually you get all those fish, and it's never like fish from all across the world or anything. It's not usually hard.
It's always just tedious, just from these areas. One, you know, one from each kind of fishing depth or like spot that is
which
here.
Which means, so, you know, go back to the beginning, it means going and clearing out room in the fridge. Mm-hmm. I can't fish all the spots with all the stuff in my boat. So like you take your stuff, you go get one of the fish. Then I have to go get the next biome. I go back to the box. Mm-hmm. Switch out my stuff, go get the next fish. Like it is just so many trips back and forth to the fridge.
Yeah.
The
straw man that I'm making up is saying, you guys asked for this to be more complicated, yet you reject the one complication that it has.
It's not complicated. Yes. It's you're doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. It's not a further complication. It's the same thing that is, you know, the thing we were talking about with a lot of cozy games in the beginning of the thing, where it's just an overlaid metaphor.
Yeah.
I'm doing the same thing. It's just calling it something different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're pissing in my hair and calling it shampoo.
No.
You know, as a thing. So we go do this, you know, and we can do this as bait for these traps. Once we do this, we kill the three mind suckers, take them back to the airman. He examines them for the necklace, and the necklace we happen to be looking for just falls out of one.
Yeah. Yeah. So we take this to the collector, and he gives us the atrophy power. This lets us harvest an entire shoal of fish at once for it at the cost of depleting it, and it doesn't come back.
Yeah. Kind of a good endgame power in that, like, you're going to leave this world behind and you don't have to care about sustainability.
Yeah,
you're see credits. If you need money, this is a quick way to get it.
Yes.
Yeah. He says, hey, the Abyssal Plains of the Devil's Spine is the next place to go. So we go to the last biome available, the Northeast, which is the volcanic area.
Yes.
And this is the most Lovecraftian, like an ancient city. You know, this is Sarnath.
Yes.
You know, ancient city has sunk here.
Right. It is like these volcanic peaks organized around these Roman-like ruins here. And the main threat are these red piranha-type fish that if you get near them, they will swarm your boat and slow you down.
Did you end up getting the final thing? This is the most mechanically complex monster in the game. Did you end up getting the...
The big one? Like, this is slowing you down so the big one can get you.
There's a mother fish here that is blind. It can only tell that you're there if you have the smaller fish on you. Mm-hmm. So these little small fish will get on you and slow you down if enough of that attracts the mother fish.
Yes.
So you want to avoid these small fish. You can't really fight the mother fish. It's huge.
Yeah.
You know, it's a big mean. It's called like blind mama or something like that. I can't remember what it's called.
Yeah.
So you're trying, this is the most complicated enemy. Mm-hmm. You need to try to stay away from the little fish either by using the banish or these volcanic vents and keep that meter down or the big fish will come after you.
Yes. Yeah. Your main quest giver here, this is a very short area too.
Oh yeah.
Like, you talk to this fanatic who, you know, says, the rite of purification is at hand and you are to be my replacement. Yeah. Nice and ominous. Right.
Yep. Strongly implied to be the guy who ate the fish to become immortal.
Yes.
From the Wailing Town.
Yeah. And he wants us to act as the herald of the purge, capital H, capital P, and go around to these three main peaks, retrieving the fathomless flames from their crags to ignite the crucibles. Cool theming. Yep. To get the flames, you have to put the right kind of fish onto the altars at these places.
if you like matching fish to silhouettes of fish, have I got a game for you?
Yeah. And now is the desert of the sightless, and now the paddling of the swollen ass. Trill.
All right. Yeah, it seems a lot like this seems a lot like Avenging the Lost Airman. We go do this. We ask him about shipwrecks and relics, and he gives us the pocket watch.
Yeah.
Once we actually complete the ritual, get the flames, we get the fish. Two of them are mutated fish. Mm-hmm. For that. So it takes a little bit longer. Once you get the flames back, the statue of the temple inform him, he starts chanting and then bursts into flames and burns down to ash, leaving only the watch.
Yeah. Good for him.
Yeah. Good for him. I like that for him.
So we have all of the artifacts now and we can return to the collector. It says, now we enter the final phase. We have everything that we need. It says, I'm going to come with you for this one. I really wish that he went into the cargo too.
That'd be great. Well, also with the implications, like that'd be great.
What's what did I put in the cargo?
Yeah, what is that? We wait until the fog is thick at 1 a.m. We go to this glowing spot in the Western Sea, and he says, this is where she was taken from us, where we can at last bring her back. Did you think that we weren't playing a game about Dead Wife? We're playing a game about Dead Wife, baby.
Dead Wife, twist. The frontier town where Al Swearengen just wants his kids back.
Al Swearengen and fucking family, Courtney Coxsuckers. this is our twist. We're coming up here. If you somehow thought this was not about Dead Wife trauma, it is. The thing I will say about this very, very trite twist is that I do think some of the reveal and foreshadowing, I think, is good.
Yes. Yeah. Like this ending as presented is the story that is telling is you've been assisting this person, is obviously into the Eldritch Arts to perform some kind of ritual in order to bring his dead wife back. But at what cost? Right.
Yes.
That is not terribly interesting to me. I think the good ending that where more is revealed is the better part of this.
Yeah. I mean, the reveal is, I'm not into the dead wife part. Like, that's as old as it comes.
Yeah. Yeah. You're not out here clamoring for wife harm.
No. I'm not a Frigman. He reads from the book, throws those relics overboard and says, to free the lost one frozen in time, to sever the chains, to bind them to this world once more, open the door to the starry heavens and lay this weary world to rest. And his wife rises from the sea, but the camera followers are up to reveal this gigantic monstrosity emerging in the background. Very Cthulhuid.
So she, you know, she fell overboard and was kind of held in this stasis alongside this fish. Can't raise her without raising the monster up.
Without raising the city, because the credits over all the settlements burning. Cthulhu is on Earth. He's teaching us new ways to kill each other.
Yes.
You know. However, what we actually want to do is the good ending.
Yeah. So if you're exploring, you will find these campsites. You'll find places where there is nothing but a burnt out campfire and a couple of like tattered, abandoned, tents and things like that. And you can inspect them. There are like runes drawn all over the place. If you find enough of these, you will eventually find a terrified old man. We learn that this was the old mayor. Who is saying like, oh, you know, asking us, did you throw it back? And he's talking nonsense. You ask him to clarify, and he says it was him and his damned wife. They dredged up a book and something cloaked in fog followed it out. Dun, dun, dun. The collector is responsible for the horrible things that are happening around here.
Yes. The book was crimson and silver. If we talk to the lighthouse keeper, she knows what he's talking about. She saw it. You know, she says you have to move on for her sake as well as yours. Take control, be rid of this thing once and for all. And when you go to the collector and demand, he tell you where the book is. He says, you don't remember, you were there. Dun, dun, dun. You told me you wanted to forget. When you take the book, you get a prompt to punch him. And we do, what are you punching? But a mirror. There is no collector. Yep.
All along.
Yep. Yes. When I talk about that foreshadowing and stuff, like in the opening cutscene, you have the book on your boat. And that's cool. All of the times he shows up, it is either like a frame, like a mirror or a reflection. That's subtle and good.
Yes.
You know, it's the oldest twist. Like it's actually you is boy, like that is an evil within two level kind of like realm space mind thing. It's very, very straight putt for this kind of stuff for subversion. But you know, there's some interest in how it was done.
Yes. Yeah. You know, says, understand this plainly before you sink us into despair. No, I know how to bring her back. It's all right there on the pages. And now you've seen its power firsthand. So this is the part of you, you know, that is still clinging on and, you know, wanting to perform these rites in order to, you know, get back what is plainly lost. Right.
Yeah. It's also the part of you that can teleport. Like you, the power has been demonstrated to you.
Yes.
You know? But instead of doing that, you can still do the bad ending at this point if you want. Instead, you take the lighthouse keeper and tell her to have the book. She says, you know, you've had trouble this whole time. You should use this moment of clarity to act. And she points the lighthouse to a place where you need to throw the book back.
Yeah.
The book tries to stay, you know, because it's an evil book. You know, wraps in your hands with silver ribbons, but you eventually throw it out into the water.
I like that idea of the book fighting to, you know, stay out of the water.
Nobody wants to drown.
But you throw it back, and when you do, this gigantic prehistoric dinosaur fish rises up and eats your ship. And then the sky clears, like the everything has been resolved. The loop is closed, right?
Yes.
And you know, when the fog gives way, there's this aurora in the sky. We get credits over, you know, views of the town still intact.
Thank God we saved all of our friends, friends like dock worker and father.
Yeah. you know, Mumbly Joe.
Mumbly Joe, that weird little kid that follows around and buys all our fish.
Yeah, always has his hands in his pockets.
Yeah. And that's Dredge, which like we talked a lot of shit about this. It's like a C to me.
Yeah.
If it wasn't, you know, something that sometimes people get mad at us about is reacting to reactions. So like but at the same time, my counter to that is always like, we live in the world. We are professional video game critics, but we're also people who play video games. So we learn about video games the same way you do. You know, if something is getting a lot of buzz and a lot of people are like, hey, man, don't fucking sleep on this. This is sick. You know, we take that into account. It doesn't mean that like that's gospel. But if people are like, no, this is a Lovecraftian fishing game, that sounds interesting already. And actually, it's really good. It's one of the best games released this year.
Yeah,
like that. I can't pretend I don't know that.
I can't pretend I don't have expectations. Right.
Yeah.
We can, you know, intellectualize around it, but like I would be lying and dishonest if I said that the logline for this promised me a game that I really, really, you know, felt like it would have been for me.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of let down by how repetitious it is.
Yeah.
You know,
I felt like I was promised a bill of sale. There was a bill of goods, you know.
Yeah. You know, for a game about the depths, there's a certain shallowness to this that kind of pervades it and is hard to, you know, ignore.
Yes. Yeah. Big disappointment. If I had played this in a vacuum, you know, I'd never heard anything about it, I wouldn't have beat it.
Mm-hmm.
I would have quit at the point in the mangroves when that quiz was like, you know, hey, I got you all these parts, but now I just need more fish.
Yeah.
I would have said, oh, this is collectathon nonsense.
Yeah.
You know, and would have quit.
Yeah.
So it's not something where having to play it for the show made me like it less. It just made me finish it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. And, so, you know, I did hold out hope, you know, as I played this, that eventually something new would be kind of brought in. But it is, again, leaning on the theming, right? Each of these areas has its own theme. Ultimately minor mechanical hiccup, to these areas that are all solved in mostly the same ways. I'm a bummer. I can't pretend not to be let down.
Yeah, not a war crime. Mm-hmm. Nothing like that. It was not the worst way I've ever spent 9 hours.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't even the worst way I spent nine persons or nine doors. You know, really wanted more.
So, yep.
A little mad at myself. Yeah. But it's not a big deal. I'm happy that it made me think about
this phenomenon
games in a way, like this phenomenon a little bit in a different way.
No.
You know, it's not if it had been marketed the way that I think it actually is, I never would have played it and mm-hmm. probably would never have had those realizations that, like, you know, everyone, I don't, you know, care what people play or what people like. For me, I'm just not in the market for something that is like the whole point of it is not to confront or challenge or make you uncomfortable and even a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, I've got experiences for that.
Yeah. I do. And, I just try to keep my powder dry on the axolotl high schools, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Like it's a real sometimes treat. So thanks everybody for listening. We appreciate you. If you have anything to say about Dredge, the deadline for that is October 15th.
Mm-hmm.
You have a little bit of time as of hearing this to write in. Also, if you have anything to say about Amnesia the Bunker or Signalis, our premium episode for this month, mm-hmm. write in at duckfeed.tv/contact.
Yeah. That's October the 15th. If you have thoughts about November's games, the deadline there is November the 15th. Those games are Sayonara Wild Hearts. We're doing two episodes on Grand Theft Auto 5. And then the premium episode that month is The Order 1866.
Yes.
If you have thoughts about multiple games, please write in multiple responses. That makes our job possible.
Yeah. If you are not demographically identical to us, two straight het cis white guys, please send me an email at gary@duckfeed.tv with a project you're working on. That can be anything: podcast, music, book, Kickstarter, streaming channel, what have you. Mm-hmm. And we'd be happy to shout it out.
Yeah.
If you want to support us, if you want to get those bonus or those premium episodes, so Signalis, The Order, if you want to get Bonfireside Chat, wrapping up the Elden Ring season soon, mm-hmm. That's got DLC coming soon. Do you see that has been announced as soon?
I did see soon in some kind of like writer's report. So
So I saw soon and something like that. We'll see. And then also our brand new show starting by the end of the year, Real Lich Hours, which is about Baldur's Gate 3. Mm-hmm. You can join us at $5 a month, patreon.com/duckfeedtv. We didn't do the redesign. Mm-hmm. And you will get all of those shows.
Yeah. Go to Patreon, which is apparently a site about a weird bean.
Yeah. Do you enjoy something? You know how there's the cool S in high school?
Mm-hmm.
This is the uncool P. Like, if you imagine the worst possible way to draw the letter P, Patreon has come up with it and mm-hmm. made it their logo on top of a whole host of other changes I can't imagine anyone asked for.
Yep.
I hate tech companies. Mm-hmm. I hate them so much. I've never heard anyone say a good thing about when this shit happens.
Yep.
You know, like, no one's like, oh man, thank God, this thing I was used to and was working fine, I'm so happy to just absolutely change into a totally unrecognizable piece of shit.
Yeah.
Nobody wanted it. What are you doing? Like, you don't have to, you're not a shark. Mm-hmm. You, like, your website doesn't die if you're not constantly redesigning it.
Yeah.
You know, one of my least favorite things about technology.
Yeah.
So anywho, you can also leave us a rating review on Apple Podcasts or Podcast Addict, and you can join us in thanking Gwen, our fabulous producer.
Thank you so much, Gwen.
Yeah. Until next time, what should they watch out for, Cole?
Watch out for the man in the mirror.